It has been cursed from the beginning with, as you say, that word, frisbee. You know, it's like boing. It's this word that's really hard to take seriously. I remember telling my dad after I graduated from college, I'm going to dedicate my life to this. And he really looked at me like I'd gone insane. And he also, you know, I remember saying, it's like I told him I was going to be a professional tiddlywinks player. He just, you know, and then you have frisbee, and then our sport is called ultimate frisbee. It's actually only called ultimate now, but the ultimate, it's like a pretentious adjective in front of a silly word. I feel like this whole thing would be different if we'd called it field disc from the beginning, and people would take it a lot more seriously.
What exactly is the sport? How is it played? What are some of the rules? Who's on a team and how do you win?
The easiest thing that people say is frisbee football, but it's not really true because the disc travels only through the air. Once you catch it, you can't run. So it's a game of movement and speed, kind of like soccer as far as running. And you're driving toward a goal line, but you don't run across the goal line. The disc flies across and is caught on the other side. The second the disc is blocked or turned over, it goes the other direction. And what makes it really fun and what attracted me and so many others is the fact that the disc hovers. So you can be running deep after a disc that it looks like there's no way you can catch. And it kind of waits for you out there. And then you dive through the air and grab it. Or you go up high and it sits up there high and hovers and you go catch it. So I'd be thrilled, you know, there's pro ultimate now, but I'd be thrilled to see LeBron James go up and catch one at 12 feet. And I also just think that it's built for, like, you know, you see it on SportsCenter top 10 a lot now. And that's because you also see outfield catches where people are laying out and diving. So that's part of the fun. And then the tribal aspect is after you've done all this, I say in the book that people look like extras from the movie Braveheart. They're all bloody and muddy on the sideline, and they're all bonded by all this diving and running and leaping. But at the same time, I didn't want the book to be just about ultimate. I tried to weave my own kind of very slow coming-of-age story in with it so I could pull in people like you who were not sports fans, because I didn't want it to just be, you know, here's a sports book.
We talked about this also being really a coming of age story of your own personal life, because you discovered this your freshman week in Harvard, and it has stuck with you for, you know, the decades ever since. Yeah. You talk, though, about it in some ways it could have delayed you growing up, because you were able to embrace ultimate and put off making a lot of kind of adult decisions.
Well, there was a review recently that said, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, it's a coming-of-age story, but a very slow coming-of-age. So, I have complicated feelings about that, because I wasn't just trying to excel at one ridiculous thing, but at two, possibly three. I was a political cartoonist at Harvard, and my big hit cartoon was a picture of Reagan urinating on an unemployed man in the gutter called The Trickle-Down Theory. So there was that. Then I was trying to write a novel. And I was a real perfectionist, so I took a long time starting. So there was that, and then I was playing ultimate. So I had three strikes against me in terms of, if I talked to a businessman at a party and he said, you know, what do you do? Well, I couldn't really say, I play frisbee. I couldn't say I'm a writer, because I hadn't published, and I'd got a few cartoons published. So I feel like one of the themes of the book is building muscles of nonconformity. Like, in fact, the epigraph is from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and it's, whoso shall be a man must be a nonconformist. So it gradually, I had to rely on my inner resources. So in a way, I was delaying growing up. In a way, I was building something that really played into my writing. I also didn't have a writing community. When I moved to Boulder, finally, I became part of the MA program. Now it's an MFA program. And I felt writers as my community. But my whole 20s, I was only ultimate, had only ultimate players, and none of them were writers. Actually, one guy among the whole group was a writer, and he just died in the last couple of weeks. Brian Doyle, great essayist from Oregon, and he was the only other writer I knew. So I felt so isolated that, looking back, I wonder if ultimate didn't give me something, a place for my voice, a stage, a place where I was known until writing took over. In fact, my last year as an ultimate player was 96, and Boulder, we went to nationals. We had this great Las Vegas regionals win, and then we went to nationals. And then I hung up my cleats, And that spring, I got married, and or actually, I got married once the book was, the year before, but that spring, my first book came out. So it was kind of a nice handoff from one thing to another.
I'm glad you mentioned Reagan. He really looms large in here, probably because of the time. I mean, it was 1979, I think you first discovered this. And Reaganomics was huge. And as you said, you had roommates and friends from Harvard who went on to be multimillionaires working in investment banking. Right. You, on the other hand, were taking that road of nonconformity. And really, ultimate as a sport has still been like that. And particularly the lack of money that's involved in it. Because a lot of people who devote themselves to sports, ultimately, pardon the phrase,
it's could... It's hard not to use that.
It is. It's a good word. Yeah. But they could end up making a lot of money, particularly people who spent as much time and energy at a sport that you and your colleagues did at Ultimate Frisbee. And yet there was almost an embrace of the fact that it was an amateur league, that it was a bit non-conforming, and that you were kind of really moving apart from the norms of that time, which was make as much money as you can.
Exactly. That's a great question. It might be the best question I've gotten so far, and it's a complicated one. And I'm going to give a little bit of a complicated answer. Reagan looms large for a few reasons. For one, I'm drawing him constantly for the Harvard Crimson, and I'm getting obsessed with my drawing. The pompadour, the lopsided grin, the waddle, his neck was all turkeyish. And so I'm drawing Reagan. On the other hand, I start college in 79, so I'm coming in in the age of Reagan, and I'm watching, you know, the kind of Wall Street mentality, greed is good, take over my roommates and a lot of the Harvard crew. But it's also weirdly affecting Ultimate, because Ultimate's been, if not hippie, it's been definitely, you know, people played barefoot and there was a certain grooviness to it. But with Reagan's ascension, you see the points taking over and grooviness going away. And it's when teams start to train, when teams take advantage of what's called the spirit of the game. We made our own calls in the early days. So suddenly you've got these kind of cutthroat teams taking over. So there's that. But only relatively cutthroat, because it's still Ultimate. And it's still, like you say, there's a great Thoreau quote, "The life that men praise and call successful is but one kind." So we're making this choice to do this thing that people don't know what it is, where so many of my roommates are making choices to cash in, basically. And I didn't sit down and do it consciously. But I think a lot of the things that formed Ultimate, Ultimate's considered a hippy-dippy sport in the beginnings. It really wasn't. It was more like a Mad Magazine sport, a National Lampoon sport, a Saturday Night Live sport. It was begun as kind of a lark. So it's that kind of nonconformity with a smile, with a joke that I liked. And also, I wanted to be a writer, and you don't just graduate from college and say, I'm a writer. You know, there's an apprenticeship, usually a long one. So it worked for me to have that weird community that was going in a direction very different than most of my Harvard classmates.
In terms of the evolution of the sport, there has been talk now about it actually making it into the Olympics.
Yes.
What is the current status of Ultimate right now as a sport?
Right now there are pro leagues in about 15 cities. And, you know, attendance isn't great, but it's good and getting better. USA Ultimate is a organization that puts on tournaments everywhere. And right now, I believe, and I'm sure someone will correct me at one of these readings or talks if I'm wrong, that we are playing, the U.S. is playing in Poland in the World Games, a co-ed team. And that team and that tournament is kind of a trial for the Olympics. So we're still being considered for the Olympics. I mean, it's depressing to see golf officially getting in the Olympics. Who cares? I mean, it's a perfect Olympic sport. I remember watching European team handball when I was young, and it's exciting to see a new sport. And people play it now in grade school and gym classes, so people know what Ultimate is, or at least they do more. So not certain yet. I think it's going to end up being an Olympic sport. I mean, at this stage in basketball's evolution, it wasn't an Olympic sport. So we're still very young. It's 1968, 1969 it starts.
How popular is it here locally, given that you played a pretty major tournament back in the day here in Boulder? Is it still pretty popular in Colorado?
It's huge. You know, they have the grassroots Ultimate here. They have tournaments here. It used to be July 4th was one of the biggest tournaments as good as nationals. People would come from all over. And, you know, you sit down six people at a bar in Boulder and probably one of them is an ultimate player or at least plays in a corporate league. I mentioned to you before we got on the air that I was talking to somebody, a radio interviewer in Madison, Wisconsin, and I said one out of two people would know what it is. And she laughed, and like that wasn't possible. And I think one out of two people in Boulder know what ultimate is. I think it's, and you know, don't, it used to be we would tell people what we did and they'd always say, is that the thing you do with dogs? Now often they'll say, oh, we have a course near our house. And you're like, no, it's not Frisbee golf. Stop saying that. But I think we're gonna break through the consciousness. And SportsCenter has really been helpful. They've been putting on top 10 plays. So that's another thing that helps.
For people who are listening who are intrigued and maybe want to get involved but have never done this before, what's the first step into participating in the sport?
I think that the grassroots ultimate, and I'm sure I don't have handy maybe we can put the link up here. I think that's probably the place to start. USA Ultimate is also, it used to be in Boulder. It's now in Colorado Springs, I think. So just a little Googling around, and you'll find corporate leagues, summer leagues, spring, fall leagues. Boulder is just burgeoning with Ultimate. So
we'll put some links at kgnu.org. Well, David Gessner will be speaking about his new book, Ultimate Glory, Frisbee, Obsession and My Wild Youth. He'll be at the Boulder Bookstore on Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. The Tattered Cover on Colfax in Denver at 7 p.m. on Wednesday. And on Thursday, he'll be in Fort Collins speaking at the Old Firehouse Bookstore, and that's at 6 p.m. And we'll put that information at kgnu.org. David Gessner, thank you.
Thank you very much.